Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. Let's start off by giving love to our title sponsor, Hess Spinal and Medical Centers. They're dedicated to your recovery. They have 16 Central Florida pain clinics and physical therapy locations. They're devoted to helping you in a path to pain recovery. When you have an auto accident, you're going through a tough time, you and your family, physically, mentally, you want to check out my people at Hess Spinal and Medical Centers, and they'll get you the right direction with the right doctors, the right treatment. You want to give them a call, 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress, call Hess, 1-800-618-HESS. Now, after doing that and getting that out of the way, we have a special guest today, a young man who has been on the show before, represented himself very nicely, so we invited him back with a few things going on in the news about the Buccaneers. Unfortunately, not football related, which is not a good thing. We have young Trevor Sycamore from the Pewter Report, pewterreport.com. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. It's good to be a repeat guest on the podcast.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't think we have a repeat guest. You're the only one.
Wow.
You're like, I'm trying to think of who David Letterman used to bring on all the time. That one young lady he was banging, I think.
I guess I'll take that, little bit of a different comparison, but I'll take it.
Absolutely. So let's just come right out the box. I asked you what you've been up to, and you said, I've been locked up with all this Jameis Winston stuff going on. Like, all this Jameis Winston stuff going on, what is going on? Is this, how can stuff be surfacing still 2 years after an event? How is that even possible?
Yeah, not even, what is it, been like 6-8 months since we first found out about this, but it's an incident that, you're right, happened 2 years ago. And, I guess the reason that we didn't hear about it 2 years ago was because nothing at the time was filed with the incident, with the driver, with Uber, nothing, like the police were not contacted, there was nothing filed, there was nothing like that. So when it happened, we know that there was a voicemail to Jameis Winston from Uber. Now, the word is, quote unquote, recently after it happened.
Okay.
But there's nothing after that. There was no confirmation of a follow up. There was no stuff, because they gave him a voicemail and said, hey, there was a report of some, quote unquote, inappropriate behavior. Now, that's it. They don't say anything. They don't describe the detail.
Okay.
And inappropriate behavior, I mean, we've all been in an Uber before.
It could be a lot of things. Yes.
And that's a big part of the detail in this case that I hope, the NFL doesn't necessarily release a lot of their information they find out. But if they do, and if we're really getting to the truth of this matter, that's one of them I'd like to figure out. Did Uber contact him and really tell him, hey, this is what's being brought against you? Because I think if that's something, then that even goes into, well, hey, did he lie to the Buccaneers about this? Did he keep it from the Buccaneers, like an omission or something like that? And so now all of a sudden, really in the last week, It's been radio silent for 8 months.
Exactly.
For 8 months, we have not heard a dang thing. And then this last week, started off with that guy in Tallahassee, Jeff Cameron, who has that radio show up there, saying that he was going to get suspended for a failure to report. Then the day later, it comes out that, wow, Adam Schefter's report, Rick Stroud, they kind of did that simultaneously. He is getting suspended. And all of a sudden, it's just kind of avalanche from then on.
Is it guaranteed he's going to get suspended to this point? We really haven't heard the NFL really say anything, have we?
No, the NFL has not issued a suspension to Jameis Winston or to the Buccaneers.
Good.
So that has not officially happened yet.
But is it inevitable?
When Schefter reports it,
It's usually
going to happen. Okay. So he and Ian Rappaport both reported it. And then obviously you have Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times. He reported it as well.
Sure.
I assume it's probably from the same source that those guys got it from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that if anybody's still hoping that he doesn't get suspended at this point, they're kind of just grasping at air. Because I do think it's going to happen.
Okay. So, first of all, it's a shame that, football is probably about a month away or so.
Yeah, training camp.
It's coming around the corner. It's a shame that we've done so many pretty positive things in the offseason, mm-hmm. and there's a month away from the football season, and we're talking about a non-football story about our starting quarterback. Yeah. I mean, I find that to be a shame. There's no way anybody can tell me that that's not that's productive for a football team. It, right. just, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Think about the coaching staff. Think about the front office that now has to start really for the first time in a few years thinking about, and I'm not saying that Jameis is not going to be here, but somewhere in their mind, they have to have a contingency plan now.
That's exactly what I said.
You know?
That's exactly what I said when this kind of came out. When the news of the detail, which actually came out after the suspension detail, with who this third passenger was, mm-hmm. this Brandon Banks guy, this former Vanderbilt football player who's in prison right now. When it came out that he was the third passenger and that there might have been a second Uber ride that was never mentioned, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, you've got to think about, like what I said before, did Jameis Winston lie to the Buccaneers about it? Mm-hmm. Or did he just purposefully not tell them the whole truth? And either one, mm-hmm. even if you don't give up on him, for the first time since you drafted him, you've got to have a plan B. There has to be a plan uh-huh. B in your mind. Uh-huh. And so I think that's for the first time. They've stood by him through... I mean, they drafted the guy number one overall when they could have picked a much cleaner prospect mm-hmm. in Marcus Mariota. Everything that's kind of the speculation, the criticism, everything that's happened over the last 3 years of him being a Buccaneer, they have stood by him without fail.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, you've got to... It's shaking a little bit. I think it's shaking.
You got to start thinking about it. It's unfortunate.
Right.
Now,
right.
For anybody who wants to email me, it's ianbeckles@radioinfluence.com. If you have any football questions, Port Richie Lou emailed me and was asking, if the allegations are true about Jameis Winston, do the Bucs cut ties with him at the end of the year with a poor record, or do we ride with Jameis Winston? My answer to that question is this. It's going to unfold at the end of the season. At the end of the season, we're going to know when the last snap happens what we're going to do with Jameis Winston. And it's all going to come down to the way he conducts himself throughout the year.
Sure.
The way he plays, obviously. And the record of this football team. Now, the whole thing with Jameis Winston, it's not like he got in trouble in college for a DUI and now this is something different.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Yep.
So you can say you didn't do it in college. Okay, you got away with it. But then you're going to go do the exact same thing.
Right.
Is it maturity? What is it? Does he have an alcohol problem?
I don't know. Both incidents, I think, probably involved alcohol. So now you got to have that in your mind. It's all something you got to weigh, because mm-hmm. even if, like I said, if you defended him to the point where you thought that, okay, maybe he didn't do what's brought up against him when he was at his time at Florida State, even though there were other incidences that showed a little bit of immaturity when he was at Florida State, the whole BB gun thing, the standing up on the table thing, there was all that. All of a sudden, if the NFL truly finds all this evidence to basically say, yeah, he did it,
mm-hmm.
All of those things have to come back in your mind. Like, you might have just got slapped in the face mm-hmm. for believing in this guy.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. We need more details from the NFL, and I hope when the suspension comes out, some of that stuff leaks, because when they say a violation of the code of conduct, it could be anything. And I think that people, and I think the Buccaneers especially, but Buccaneers probably know a lot more than we do at this point anyways. Mm-hmm. You would want to know if that means he was guilty of the allegations against him, or if he was just guilty of making the NFL look bad. Which one is it?
I don't think the NFL cares that we know. Okay, the NFL doesn't really give out many details, it's covering their ass. I get it, but for us, it doesn't really matter, because once again, with the allegations that were from Florida State, this brings them all back up.
Right.
Even if he's covering up for one of his boys, and I said this. It doesn't usually work out that the NFL quarterback is covering up for one of his boys.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. It works the other way.
Yeah.
Because his boys, what's going to happen? They get a slap on the wrist, whatever.
Right.
Jameis is losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then maybe millions on the other side
right,
of that.
Right,
because of the possibility of voiding his contract. The whole thing with me is I like the kid. I've met him. He has a good aura to him. I want to find out what the problem is, because
there's
a problem. It could just be alcohol. That could be the answer. But to put at 21 years old in a situation you're in, if you're at a state of mind where you don't know that you're not supposed to grab an Uber driver's vagina,
mm-hmm.
if you're there, then you're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Because you have to know that. You know, I went through it. I wasn't Jameis Winston. I wasn't the first pick in the draft. But when you're the first pick in the draft, you have zero tolerance.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yeah.
And I would like to sit him down and just say, what's the deal?
Right.
What's the problem? And I think the Bucs are probably trying to figure out the problem as well.
Yeah. No, and yeah, I don't really know what it is there. And people, you know, on Twitter have gone back and forth, you know, as the Times have come out with their stuff and we've come out with our stuff and everything. All the Bucs outlets have kind of been coming out with their things. And we're basically, after the third passenger was revealed and he kind of gave his statement of what actually, from his point of view, happened that night, we're all questioning a lot of different stuff, of whether Jameis lied, who's telling the truth, now what. And there have been people on Twitter who were like, how can you just take away all the good that he's done? Listen, every time I've ever been around Jameis Winston personally, he's been a wonderful human being.
Me too.
Wonderful human being.
Me too.
Great kid. But as Greg Allman said a couple of times this week as he's talking to people on Twitter, that doesn't mean that we're not going to report what just happened.
Exactly.
It happened.
Yep.
This is a thing. Mm-hmm. The NFL is officially, well, not officially, I guess, but the NFL is suspending him because they found something. So if even if you're Jameis Winston's most like staunch advocate of him, this is happening. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to talk about it. You have to, and some people are going to the ends of the earth to defend it. Maybe their theories end up being right. I have no idea.
How can you go to the end of the earth to defend something where only a couple people know the real answer?
I don't know.
I mean,
don't know.
Listen, we see people, and you've got a chance to meet him quite often. You around him.
Yeah.
I've met him a couple times. We don't know him.
Well, sure.
We don't know
him. Right, right.
Just like,
you know. I wouldn't say that I know him.
No,
yeah.
When, if an actor gets in trouble, everybody's like, oh, he seems like a nice guy. You don't know them.
Sure.
Okay, so I want to believe he's a good kid, but it's Russian roulette now. I mean,
right.
Because at the end of this season, then we're talking about serious bucks that this kid's going to be making.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
And
are you
make
about
that
to
mistake?
Make this guy the highest paid NFL player? Because you know that's what his contract is.
Mm-hmm.
I think one detail about this that's kind of like we were talking about earlier about whether he would be guilty of the actual allegation or just against the NFL is the number of suspensions that we're hearing. 3 games is not the protocol. The protocol is 6 for an instance like this.
Okay.
Any kind of like domestic violence, sexual assault, sexual misconduct, anything involving that, it's 6 games.
But can you put this, can you bunch this with domestic violence?
It's kind of all under the same bubble.
Okay.
But with the NFL at least. But it's, again, it's because I believe I read from Schefter that he said next, because this is Jameis is technically his first offense in the NFL, he said next offense is a year suspension. So if that's the case, then that's the protocol. It's normally 6, then a year.
Mm-hmm.
So where does 3 come from? And right when we learned that it was 3 games, we also immediately learned at the same time he wasn't going to appeal. So does that mean that the NFL went, hey, it's 6, and if you don't give us what Ezekiel Elliott and Tom Brady did to us, we'll just make it 3?
See, the NFL to me, I don't want to be insensitive, okay, because I don't know what happened.
Right.
I don't know. And
right.
If he did it, I say first and foremost, you got to go down, brother. If you did what everybody says you did, you got to go down. But the NFL, they try to cover their ass in by any means necessary.
No question.
They know that they have zero tolerance now, which they've come out and told us. So they have to do something. But they also want to do what's best, what's the best look for the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's sitting down, Jameis, and go, yo, dog, we know you messed up now. It's normally 6 games. Let's rock it to 3 and try not to make that big of a deal out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Jameis would say no.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Sure.
And if you didn't do it.
Sure.
I'll be damned if you don't appeal if you didn't do it. I know this. Something happened. Something happened in that Uber car, and Jameis has to know that he has to keep his name out of the paper and out of the press. That's not football related.
That's the thing for me, though, is that kind of what you just said there, and a friend of mine and I were talking about that. If you have this on your record in people's mind, in the back of your head, of everything that happened in Florida State, and this comes up again, how are you not doing everything that you can to go, this is not me?
Mm.
He's about to be a husband.
Exactly.
He's about to be
exactly.
a father.
Mm-hmm.
He's people have said he's been an incredible man in the community. And I've seen that myself.
Yeah, you have.
How are you not going, no, I'm fighting this? forget you. Forget what you are telling me I'm suspended. Mm-hmm. This is a serious allegation against him, and he's about to just take it.
Mm-hmm. And I said this before. Somebody alleged that it's the domestic abuse or whatever it may be, sexual allegations, and I didn't do it. I'm not taking a suspension. I'm going to court with it if I didn't do it.
Right.
So, you know.
Now, Schefter is saying that the reason why he is not appealing, a element of why, is because if this were to happen to drag on, and let's say the suspension, like Tom Brady, goes even into the next year.
Be a lot more money.
Be a lot more money against him. He lost. But do we really think this is not going to get resolved by the way Ezekiel Elliott had it, where it got resolved just near the end of the year?
Barely.
Does he really think that?
That Ezekiel Elliott thing was one of the ugliest. That was one of the most poorly managed thing I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know.
You don't want to put it in the NFL's hands because they don't give a rat's ass about him. They give a rat's ass about that shield, and that's it.
Yeah.
Now, I've had some other fans ask me, now, what would happen if Ryan Fitzpatrick goes in there and they're 3-0 and he looks really good? Well, this is what happens. Jameis Winston goes in. That's what happens.
Right.
He's on the side of the stadium. He's a number one pick overall in the draft. This is what's happening, okay? If Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is probably the fourth or fifth best backup quarterback in the league, maybe higher, possibly.
He's got a lot of experience,
Okay, that's a pretty, you know, that's not a bad thing to say, you know? If he ends up being your starting quarterback and you put Jameis Winston, your number one pick, behind him, then give the keys to the complex to somebody because you just pretty much conceded that you effed up the franchise.
Right, right.
Okay?
So
a guy that can't start from the Jets is going to be our starting quarterback now?
So yeah, somebody was like, what if he goes 3-0? And I was like, great. Goes 3-0 and Jameis takes over.
There you go.
That's it. So he did his job as a backup.
Now,
that's it.
Now, I'm going to tell Jameis this right now, and I know he's going to be on the sideline cheering. The worst thing that can happen for Jameis is if Ryan Fitzpatrick goes 3-0. He doesn't want that. Think about that for a second now. If Ryan Fitzpatrick goes 3-0 and Jameis comes in after his allegations and throws 4 bad passes in week 4, they are going to boo him right out of there, and they're going to be chanting Ryan Fitzpatrick's name. Yeah. You know that's a fact, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're getting asked the question for a reason,
exactly,
right? Because people are ready for a quarterback to win him something.
Well, let me say this. Let me compare it this way. When you talk about that analogy, think about how extreme the analogy is that Nick Foles won a Super Bowl.
Right.
He won a Super Bowl, not despite him, because of him. And he's going to be sitting behind Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
So you can't put Jameis Winston behind Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I've gotten a lot of should the Bucks trade for Nick Foles questions. A lot.
Somebody is.
Yeah. Somebody's
going to trade for Nick Foles.
Yeah.
The Eagles are stupid if they go into the season with Nick Foles as number 2 quarterback.
Yeah.
But is he ever going to be more marketable than he is right now?
No.
Never.
Well, maybe, I guess, like a little bit into this year if a quarterback goes down.
Not far into the year, though.
Not far into it.
So it's just a shame, like I said, that we're talking about non-football related stuff and not actual the Buccaneers, because they really did some great things in the offseason. We're talking to Trevor Sycamore from PewterReport.com. Have you got a chance to go out to all the mini camps and stuff?
I did, yeah.
So let us know about some of the things that you saw, good, bad, and different.
Branson Buckner's fun. I know we've talked about this a ton on Peter Report.
I love him already.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's a guy who I think, whether you're a 10-year vet like McCoy is, or whether you're a first-round pick rookie like Vita Vea is, he's going to get the best out of you, whatever it is. Whether you are a great anchor run stopper, whether you're a good pass rusher, whether you're a vet pass rusher, whether you're a rookie pass rusher, whatever, he is going to make sure that you are getting the most out of your talent. Okay. And I think that's a really good sign in a coach.
There's no doubt.
And I think that was really good from him. They're working on a ton of red zone stuff, as they should.
Yeah, they should.
But they've been, I think, so there's like 12 periods in a practice, and I think at least 4 of them, sometimes a little bit more, were red zone work.
Okay.
Whether it was 11-on-11, whether it was goal line stuff, whether it was just 7-on-7, working one side of the field or the other. They're making it a priority, I think, to make sure that they get that fixed. Now, it's practice, so who knows? But I do think that they're taking steps in the right direction, I think, in both coaching stances.
Well, the red zone wasn't pretty a lot of times last year. I think more so offensively they struggled. Now, V2V, you were talking about it's almost impossible to evaluate somebody in shorts. But you can see the way they move. You can see the way they react. How did he look?
I'm going to be honest. I mean, like, he's a project. You know, I think that – and it's tough to hear that as your first-round pick, but obviously I think they'd be honest with themselves in saying they picked him at a potential anyways. Now, you can say, hey, you need your first-round pick to contribute, so if he's not going to contribute for you right away, why is he your first-round pick? But this is the guy they selected, so it kind of is what it is. I'm just kind of telling it the way that it is. He got used really weird at Oregon. I think, he was – they would have him almost – like, picture just three down linemen in Washington anyway. Mm-hmm. Pac-12 plays a really weird brand of football. So, like, let's just say he's the left defensive end in, like, a 3-4 or something. Mm-hmm. There's only three down linemen. Sometimes they'd have this dude, this 350-pound dude, pops, like, balls hiked, pop straight up, give up all his leverage, and almost do, like, a full-line stunt to the other side. Why? Because the offensive line keys in on him so much that the other two dudes just kind of clean up, and he takes a bunch of blocks.
Sure.
That works in the Pac-12. None of that technique works in the NFL.
Definitely not.
And you saw it immediately in rookie minicamp when Brenson Buckner, actually, the very first drill that he did with these guys is he just had an offensive lineman in front of him, and he just said, go get the quarterback.
Okay.
Do what you are comfortable with and show me what you do.
Yeah.
And he spent more time with Vita Vea than anybody else.
Well, this is a fact, okay? And you've been a Buccaneer fan your whole life,
Correct. Pretty
much? I've been a Buccaneer fan since 1990. Every person that's drafted in the NFL is a project. All of them.
Well, sure.
Okay? I don't care if you're drafted first, fifth round, 12th round, back in the day, it doesn't matter. If I asked you in the history of the Buccaneers, how many rookies have excelled? I could think of one. You know who it is?
Who?
Michael Clayton. Can you think of another one? Excelled as a rookie. Excelled now. I mean, when I mean excelled, I mean you played up to NFL caliber level.
I mean, could I say Carnell Williams? Because he won Rookie of the Year.
Four games.
Okay.
The rest of it was garbage.
Yeah, it's true.
The rest of it was garbage. He balled out for four games.
Four games.
He got his shoes in the Hall of Fame, and the rest of it was hot garbage from that point for the rest of his whole career.
Yeah.
But I will give you a half points for that one.
Okay. I'm trying to think of any other rookie. People are probably screaming at me on the podcast names that I can't hear.
There are just not a lot of them. Because they really don't exist. It takes a while. I started 16 games my rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to watch that film. I wouldn't. Because rookies make rookie mistakes.
Yeah.
V2V, I mean, I'm an old, decrepit, beat-up cat. Right now, I put my hand on the ground, I'll confuse him. Because I know the game better
than
him.
Sure.
Forget about the rest of it. I'm not. Yeah. Physically, I don't want to be there. I'm just telling you. I was talking about mentally.
All right.
I'm going to brain F him because he does. And, somebody brought this up the other day about, well, I was on air yesterday on the bone, and we were talking about Jameis Winston, and Gerald McCoy's name came up. And, one of my problems with Gerald McCoy is I don't think he's very instinctive, okay? But instincts, we'll find out really right away whether he's an instinctive player, V2V is or not.
That's pretty, yeah.
Because that's something that you're really born with.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of players that aren't flashy. They're just born with an instinct to be near the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Gerald McCoy was born with that. He was born with ridiculous amount of quick twitch muscles. He's obviously a physical specimen.
Right.
But if he had the instincts like some other players did, his name would definitely excel a lot more than it does. Now, I heard there was some scraps in practice with McCoy and Jensen early on.
Yeah, I mean, who said that? I can't remember who said it. Somebody went on the radio and said, oh, I think it was Jameis. Jameis went on the radio and said that, like, McCoy and Jensen have already been kind of going at it. Nothing, like, nothing too bad, though. I mean, like,
no, this is good.
Yeah. Oh, right. No, but I mean, like, fist fighting. I didn't mean bad as in, like,
no,
negative.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's good. Trust me. The chippiness, the edge, this team has 100% needed that.
For a long time.
Long time. Yeah. And Levante David talked about that, too, and he actually talked about this and then used the word fun to talk about it. He's like, we are pushing each other competitively. Mm. And now, a lot of teams use that cliche. Mm. They talk about that. They just go, the offense is pushing the defense, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
For the first time, I actually believe them.
Because
I watched it, and on back-to-back-to-back plays, I remember it was the Tuesday practice at minicamp. Back-to-back-to-back plays. They're near the end of practice, right? So everybody's hot. You're exhausted. Mm-hmm. You're, you know, they're running goal line, 11 on 11. Mm-hmm. And first, like, the defense has this huge pass break up in the end zone. Literally all 11 of them celebrate it.
Okay.
Then the offense goes back and they do something. They score. And then on the final play, Chris Godwin scores in the corner of the end zone. And Mike Evans, and like to celebrate, they did a little alley-oop. And Mike Evans dunked it over Justin Evans to score. And they just started like getting in each other's face.
Really?
And like, so that's for the first time I'm actually seeing. Like, you could tell like Mike Evans was almost like, yeah, suck it. Like, to his own teammate.
Some fire,
you know what I'm saying?
Fire's good, man.
And I had not seen that in so long with the
Buccaneers. Well, I tell you what. I think we kind of got brainwashed with Hard Knocks last year. I thought, I love Hard Knocks. Because
I do too.
I didn't love it last year. Well, I normally love it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the fact that I know the mentality of a lot of the Buccaneers, it seemed fluffy for me. It just seemed very staged.
Oh, like over-dramatized.
It was way over, you know. But it just seemed more so because it was my team. Now,
well, you just knew better.
I know better. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right, right.
Because, you know, the word leadership to me is the most overblown word in sports. I had somebody hit me up with another email that had said, he said, wants to hear stories about leadership about two of his favorite pre-Dungy era players. And I'm pretty sure both these players played for Tony Dungy. Jeff Auerbach asked for Paul Gruber and Hardy Nickerson.
Mm-hmm.
I play with both those guys. They are both leaders in their own right, but polar opposites. Hardy Nickerson was more of a on the field, want to fight you locker room guy, but locker room guy is just, he's just a tough dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought the Steelers mentality and toughness here to Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
and he was a reason why they become badasses. He was one of them. Watch Hardy. And then Paul Gruber, I was in the same meeting room with him for 7 years. And I don't think we had one conversation. I don't know if he knows more than 10 words. I'm being serious. But on Sunday, you do know this. Paul's going to be prepared.
Yeah.
Paul's going to play his ass off.
Yeah.
And he's going to play every snap.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's leadership as well.
Sure.
You know, so when you look at our defense, and Quan Alexander pretty much came out and said, I'm the guy. Come and follow me. And I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, DeSean Jackson last year didn't fit. And I'm not sure if it's not more Jameis' fault than it was DeSean Jackson's fault.
Yeah.
Who is our voice on offense? Because I'm praying for Jameis to take two steps back.
It's supposed to be Jameis. But I think Jameis being there, when Jameis got drafted number one overall, this franchise had been so devoid of offense for basically forever.
Forever.
That they immediately handed this guy the crown.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you saw him giving, like, pregame speeches week one rookie year.
Yeah, yeah,
and you're talking about being a rookie.
Yeah.
I mean, how unnatural is that? And so, to your point, who's the voice on offense? I think it's like set. Now, not that I don't think Winston can be a leader, but it's so engraved in everybody's head that Winston's the leader that, like, I don't know how much Mike leads these guys. Like, I think Mike's great, and I think Mike's, like, a tough competitor, but I don't know how many people on offense allow them, especially on the team, like, allow themselves to look at somebody else on the offense as a leader.
Well, like what I'm trying to say is, it's not about who gives a pregame speech. It's not. That's not leadership.
Right, right, right.
Like, Drew Brees gives a great pregame speech, but he's also Drew Brees. Like, his resume speaks for itself.
Sure, right.
Listen, when we all saw it last year when we talked about eating W's.
Yeah, I knew you were going to bring that up.
When you looked around, we had people rolling their eyes.
Yeah.
On your team.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Not good.
So, when you talk about resume, and I'm telling, if I could sit down with Jameis, I would say to him this year, just shut your mouth and go play, man. Just shut your mouth, go play, and the leadership stuff is going to come. Because when he's talking about do the right thing, I'm going to go, what? So you're going to tell me to do the right thing? You're going to tell me to do the right thing? When you're grabbing hoo-haws and Ubers, and you're suspended for the first three games, and you let us all hanging for the first three games, that's not leadership. So I'm hoping that the coaches say to Jameis, this is the year. Just go out and play, bro. He's already the captain, right?
Right.
He has a C on your chest.
Right. That's another thing. Somebody was like, hey, is Jameis going to be captain this year?
They might remove it. They, it might be a good example to him if they removed his C, because you let your team down, man. You let your team down, and it's not even on the football field. It's hard to use that quote unquote leadership thing when you're not there on Sundays.
Yeah.
When Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is leading our team out there against the Saints and against the Steelers and against the Eagles, that's not what they expected when they drafted Jameis way back at number one.
Right.
So you're letting your damn team down.
Right.
So watching minicamp out there, DeSean Jackson brought up his name a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was evident as a Buccaneer fan that there was something off between DeSean Jackson and Jameis last year. Did you see any improvement in minicamp? Not like you can compare it, but is that something they were working on?
I don't know if like Cam Brate said to us during like OTAs, he's like, Jameis' deep ball has improved dramatically. And I get that we don't see all the snaps, but no, it didn't.
Okay.
So, like, no, I at no point saw Jameis' deep ball improve, quote-unquote, dramatically. Mm-hmm. There were even a couple instances where he didn't connect with DeSean Jackson. Sure. Like, I've seen more misses to DeSean Jackson than hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the coaching staff is a little less stubborn this year in how they're using some of their weapons. Okay. You know, like, for example, the end of last year, probably let's just say, like, the last fourth of the season, it was obvious that Chris Godwin was the second best outside receiver on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Did he play? No. Why? Because they tried to force Jackson in that role.
Sure.
Now, when they signed DeSean Jackson, I did a film piece with a friend of mine who helped me, who's covered him before, and we looked at him in his time at Philadelphia and in his time in Washington, and they used DeSean Jackson so much in the slot, on drag routes, on short things, as like mismatches. What's the biggest play DeSean Jackson had last year? Oh, it was a slant route that they got to him easily, and they let him have the ball in his hands, and guess what? He did the rest with his feet. It was against the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They didn't even run that route, like ever again.
Uh-oh.
And so this year, in this training camp, I've seen a lot more of DeSean Jackson in the slot, using his speed, not necessarily just to burn you 60 yards, because that's tough to do.
Sure.
It's tough to do hitting you 60 yards on the field, but that's not all DeSean Jackson has to be. So I think that I have not seen improvement, I'll say, like, execution-wise, but I think the setup is so much better this year for them to get there, to have more improvement in that area. I think the coaching staff's kind of adapting to their talent more than they did last year.
Well, hope the coaching staff and Dirk Koetter spend some time maybe watching some of DeSean Jackson films of him in Philadelphia and Washington.
That's what I was writing last year.
You know, seriously, and because it was clear last year, like, when I say something was off, I don't know if I should blame Jameis for 80% of just him being off on his deep passes. I don't know if DeSean Jackson just doesn't fit in this system. I don't know if we're not using DeSean Jackson the right way. But at the end of the day, we spent a lot of money on a receiver that did very little for us last year.
Right. Lowest numbers of his career.
Yeah.
You know, so if you ask me, most of the blame is on Jameis Winston.
Okay.
Because I've watched a lot of the game film back over and over. And I mean, you have multiple examples, like the throw. It started with the throw in Minneapolis, where DeSean just had the guy beat by 5 straight yards, and Jameis lame ducks it up, and the cornerback not only recovers, picks it off, and DeSean's not even close to him, and it's just stuff. And later in the season, people would point to, okay, well, DeSean was a little bit lazy after that. Like, look, man, I get frustrated too. If you can't hit me,
you can't blame DeSean Jackson for being frustrated
last year. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Later in the year, there's a couple of clips where you look at it and you go, okay, DeSean could have cared more here. But I don't really hold that against him.
Every receiver
Jameis
in the history...
Jameis couldn't hit him.
Yeah, every receiver in the history of the NFL acted that way when you don't hit him.
100%.
Jerry Rice.
100%.
Everybody. Like, everybody, I remember, like, everybody's a big Jerry Rice fan. Everybody was like, well, you don't ever hear Jerry Rice complaining. Yeah, you did, towards the end of his career, when they weren't giving him the ball.
Sure.
You know, because nobody wants to be to blame, because DeSean Jackson's still a talent.
Oh, no question.
You know, and then I heard in the offseason there was some rumors of his name being out there on the trading block, and I was thinking to myself, Like, I heard Deshaun Jackson's name on a trading block. I heard Gerald McCoy's name on a trading block. And I heard some other names of other teams maybe trying to trade Donald Penn. I'm like, well, I'd like to bring Donald Penn back, personally. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking to myself, well, do we want to trade Deshaun Jackson? Maybe we're pulling a plug too early, but if he's going to go and do what he did last year, and he could be a valuable piece of somebody else's team, and we have Godwin sitting there waiting to be a star.
Right.
Maybe we pull the plug on something that's still marketable.
I just think that they, and I mean, there's merit to that thought process, but I'm just thinking, you spent all this money in free agency, you spent a draft pick acquiring Jason Pierre-Paul, you're getting better. You acquired this guy for a reason. Just use him better.
Yeah.
That's the thing to me.
It seems easy. I don't know if it's that easy.
Look, I'm a small 5'11 white kid who never played football, okay? Like, it's super easy for me to say that. Now, sure. I've watched a lot of film, I've learned a lot about the game, so mm-hmm. I kind of understand concepts here and there. But these guys know way more than I do, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But when I look at stuff and I'm like, hey, this worked other places, why don't the Bucks run it?
Mm.
Then that's just where I have some questions. Not saying I know more than the coach, but I just have questions when I've seen something. There's a blueprint to get the most out of Deshaun Jackson. And I know that Cutter likes to run not only a vertical offense, but also a vertical-based offense that has to do with the two tight end sets, which at that point, you're looking at a lot of different formations. And you can almost get carried away with looking at your offensive game plan and almost like going at it like a checklist and almost being like, okay, here we're going to run 12 personnel. Now we're going to run 13. Now we're going to run 21. And you're just like almost kind of like going down a checklist instead of maybe feeling the game out.
Yeah.
So I understand where that could be. You just hope that what last year was, because whether you believe what I say or not, last year sucked.
Yes, it did.
No doubt about it.
Yes, it did.
So you just hope that, I don't know if it's maybe... I don't know if it's like a lack of stubbornness or maybe just more creativity this year, more innovation, whatever it is, you just hope it improves.
It's got to have a different look.
It has to.
And I don't know, and when they picked Jameis, and there's rumors that Jameis was Raheem's guy. You hear that before?
No.
I heard rumors that Jameis was Raheem's guy, and Cutter wanted...
Wait, you mean Lovey?
Lovey. And Cutter wanted Mariota.
Oh.
I've heard that before. They won't admit that.
Never.
Okay, but,
never.
But I've heard that before. If you look back at the success that Jameis Winston has had, he's had some success as a quarterback.
Sure.
He's not won, but he's had success as a quarterback. Most of it are jump balls to Vincent Jackson and Mike Evans.
Yeah.
Most of it.
And if you watch his Florida State tape, especially that year he threw 40 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, won the Heisman, won the national championship. A lot of those balls, he just looks down deep downfield and just
Calvin Benjamin,
it.
And there's beasts out there.
Yeah, Rashad Green, Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, they had Kermit Whitfield in the slot at that point. It was like the fastest dude in college football.
Sure.
I mean, they had Devonta Freeman coming out of the backfield, Dalvin Cook for a little bit after that, the year after. So, I think no question it was – college is a different game, and that's why I think that it's definitely when I look at kind of who Jameis was in college and how he really jumped the shark with a lot of success, because he did not have the similar success the year after.
Absolutely.
It was much less efficient.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of jumped the shark with that whole ordeal. So I really, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, hey, this fourth year in the NFL, this the year.
It's got to be.
It sucks that he misses the first three games.
Well, and then think about this as an organization. The Bucks, I'm going to say they're frugal, but they're cheap. You could almost say they're cheap.
They got a history of it.
They really do.
Last 2 years, they've been, they've gone into the pockets a little bit, but historically, yeah.
They always seem to have money, though. They always seem to have money to spend and don't spend it.
Yeah.
Always. Like, most other teams are right to the cap. Like, we always seem to have money, you know?
Right.
What do you think they're going to do in a quarterback position? Because I don't know if we have a third quarterback. And if we have a vested third quarterback, that means he's going to be on the roster for the first three games of the season. Then they're going to have to cut him.
Yeah.
That means they got to pay him his whole salary.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that.
Right.
So we may have to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick and an unvested quarterback.
Yeah.
That's not a good way to start a season. Ryan Fitzpatrick could get hit and get a concussion in the first game, and then we're going with somebody who's never freaking done anything in the game before.
Yeah. Ryan Griffin's the dude who is their third-string quarterback who they've had for... what is it, like 3 years now, I think? And we keep hearing like, oh, we like what we have in Ryan Griffin. Okay, why didn't you play him last year when Jameis went out with a shoulder?
Yeah, right.
Because, like, he's the younger guy. Mm-hmm. If he plays well, guess who has draft pick value for a trade? Mm-hmm. Or guess who now you don't have to pay Ryan Fitzpatrick because you have Ryan Griffin? So, like, I think they're lying to their teeth there.
I don't think they're lying. Just saying the kid looks good, that doesn't mean he's not a that doesn't mean he's a better choice to quarterback your team than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Well, at that point, I'm thinking, I think they've had Ryan Griffin 3 or 4 years. At that point, why have you not invested anything more in a backup quarterback in terms of the draft? Like, just pick one. Mm. Maybe he's better than Ryan Griffin. Because if you're really not that high on him, that's been my thing. And that's why, I mean, we're talking about plan B for Jameis Winston. They have to draft a quarterback this year. Now, not high. I'm not saying high.
Yeah.
But they're 100%. Drafting a quarterback.
They have to. They're at that point.
Right.
They're at that point. And, you know, Jameis, a lot of this is to blame, okay? He made this bet, okay? It's not like somebody said, you know, this is not like a domestic abuse thing to where there's two sides of it. You were drunk in an Uber cab.
Right.
That Uber driver, although she knew Jameis was famous, something happened.
Right.
Period. Okay.
Right.
You didn't tell me, like, I've been in Uber cabs before, and I sit down in the back, and I don't say anything, and I don't look at anybody. Nobody can accuse me of anything if I just sit back there and mind my own goddamn business.
Sure.
So something happened.
Sure.
And you lied about it. You got caught lying about it.
Yeah.
The NFL has zero tolerance for anything women-related, and they should now because they've hid so many things for so many damn years.
Right. It's their own fault.
It's 100% their fault, almost to the point now where Roger Goodell wants to – he'll act like God so much.
Oh, no question.
And he'll act like God and the court. Because he doesn't care what the court system says.
No, yeah.
He's jury, judge,
executioner.
The
no
whole
question.
Nine yards, absolutely. So Jameis is in a situation, but as a Buccaneer fan, I was listening to the sports radio the other day on the way into doing my show, and people are burning his jerseys. People are telling their kids to take his jersey off. People don't want to hear about I was like, that's a little much. That's a little much to pull the plug that way this soon.
Right.
Because this is what's going to happen if we pull the plug on Jameis Winston at the end of this year. He'll go get paid somewhere else, and if they put him on a good team, he'll win. That's the way it goes.
Right.
He's good enough to win. You can't get rid of a quarterback that's good enough to win. Ryan Tannehill gets paid all the time. Sam Bradford gets paid all the time.
Somehow.
But who do you want, Sam Bradford or Jameis Winston?
Jameis Winston.
I mean, of course. Yeah. Who do you want, Ryan Tannehill or Jameis Winston? Ryan Tannehill is paid.
Yeah.
So you watch what you wish for.
Yeah.
You want to press the reset button and start all over again and just eliminate the last 4 years of progress? Because there's been progress. Regardless of our record, there's been progress for the Buccaneers.
Oh, no question.
You know, especially offensively. Yeah. It's not time to pull the plug on it. I hope fans realize that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say obviously depends a lot of what we're about to find out. Whether, like I said, like he was guilty in the matter or if it was just...
Well, he's already guilty. He's already guilty. Yeah. If there's a suspension, he's guilty.
No, and I agree with you, I guess. And I'm much more on that side of the fence than not because, you know, as I said earlier in the podcast, something happened.
Yeah, of course.
He's getting suspended for a reason. We can, on our side, be like, well, this, well, that. You don't think the NFL's thought of that?
Yeah.
The NFL's already looked into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all the questions that you have, I know a lot of people like to play detective on Twitter. All the questions that you have, they have already thought of and investigated.
Sure.
So that tells me that you're right. He is probably guilty.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to see what the official statement from because if he lied about it.
Well, he lied about something, and if he gets suspended at all, he's guilty. Period. And nobody's gonna want to hear your story. What story is there?
Right.
You did it.
Right.
Like I don't even know what he's gonna say when he speaks on it. He's gonna have to just bite it. He's gonna have to say, I messed up. I was young.
Because
I was immature.
If he's innocent. Why aren't you fighting him?
Exactly.
Man? You know, this is your narrative. Your whole narrative is sexual misconduct in the past.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
You did the exact same shit. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Now the NFL.
Good.
No, it's not good. And you want to be proud with your quarterbacks wearing that logo.
No question.
And I think some people are not proud.
That's what I'm saying. That's my thing. It like, do you pull the plug on them quick? Ideally, no.
Not at this point.
But
Ben Roethlisberger,
yeah,
he was Lucifer himself,
right,
for a couple months,
yeah,
and he went out there and he played,
he won. No
then
question.
He played some good football, yeah. Yeah, and everybody forgets about it. And listen, Jameis could be in the same situation where he's grown up and he's 2 years later and he's married and he has a kid, and hopefully he's growing up and he's not doing the same bonehead mistakes,
right?
But it's to a point now where you have zero room,
right?
Zero wiggle room,
right?
And you let the fans get on that teeter-totter to where when you're not playing well, they're gonna attack you.
Right.
Like last year.
That's going to be forever, though.
He was still the golden child last year. He was still Jameis Winston, savior.
No, but yeah. That's
He's not that anymore.
No.
He's not that anymore.
Like 6 years down the road, if he starts struggling, people can go, yeah, he's just not, I don't care, he's not a good dude, we should have got rid of him. This will be with Jameis Winston forever.
You're right.
Now, if he wins, like we talked about a little bit earlier, if he wins, if he makes it to the playoffs, great. He gets a lot of fans back.
Mm-hmm.
But the second he starts struggling,
he's done.
This is going to come up.
He's done.
It's going to forever come up.
Well,
if he gets suspended, obviously.
Well, the Florida State thing still comes up. And this is... resurfaced it all.
Now for sure,
and now some just bonehead things, you know, 20 years old are going to come back up. So, like he made the bet. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Nobody forced him to do that. And I'm going to say this for some advice for Jameis. Find some better friends. And I understand about loyalty to your boys growing up. I get it. But when you're hanging out with your boys, I want you to be with some of your boys who look out for you and don't put you in an Uber all by yourself with a woman driver in the front seat. The dumbest thing I ever heard in my damn life.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any damn sense.
And people were saying, you know, the third passenger, who is the guy who Brandon Banks, who is, he's in prison right now for aggravated gang rape for 15 years.
Okay? And the other guy was with Jameis and his Florida State incident.
It's Ronald Darby, okay? And so people are saying, well, this Banks guy, he's not Jameis's friend, he's Darby's friend. It's like,
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care.
Jameis is hanging out with Ronald Darby, who's hanging out with this gang rapist. That's the same thing.
The exact same thing, unfortunately. You know? And I've had people say, well, what's Jameis doing out at the club drunk anyways?
I don't care about Jameis being in a club.
He's a 21
right,
year old.
I don't care about Jameis being in a club.
Every quarterback that ever played in 21 was in the club trying to pick up skirts. That's the way it goes, okay? Now, but you have to be responsible more so than ever. And because this, 10, 20 years ago, maybe it's not a big deal. 10, 20 years ago, you might not even hear about this. There was so 10, many...
10, 20 years ago, he just... Yeah.
You wouldn't have heard of it.
Yeah.
There was domestic abuse up the yin-yang, and we never heard of it.
Every sport.
And then yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And then when Ray Rice, the video came out, then all of a sudden it all started bubbling and
video
percolating.
Video changed everything.
And they were like, oh my God, there's been so much swept under the rug, and that's the NFL's problem, that's for sure. Yeah. Trevor Sikkema, PewterReport.com. If somebody wants to get in contact with you social media-wise, what's your handle?
At Tampa Bay Trey, T-R-E. And then, of course, I do a lot of stuff at Pewter Report as well.
Good stuff. And I was going back and forth with Scott the other day, and make sure to tell him to contact me. We keep on talking about, you know, collaborating and doing something.
All right, I'll make sure.
I'll send
the word over.
Don't be a stranger. We're actually building a studio in the back here.
Yeah, it's nice.
Then, we'll have a chance.
Coming along good.
There won't be all this beeping going on and all different stuff going on. But I appreciate you sitting in with me, brother. I like your work, and we're gonna get this done again for sure.
No, I appreciate you having me on again.
Good stuff. I want to thank Hess Spinal and Medical Centers as well. I have two other podcasts. In the Trenches is this one, Flavor in the Year, and I also have my brand new cannabis podcast, which comes out on Wednesdays, associated with Trulieve and also Tetra Health Center. So you want to check that out for all those people who are curious about legal cannabis and its benefits. You definitely want to check on that. I appreciate you guys listening in. Have a great week, and please be safe. Peace out.
You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
The World Cup is the globe's biggest sporting event. There's over 3.4 billion people expected to tune in at some point to watch this event, which is incredible. 1 billion people watched the 2014 World Cup final between Argentina and Germany, according to FIFA. And by comparison, the global audience for the Super Bowl is roughly about 150 million. There is absolutely no comparison. We could look at the numbers from the Winter Olympics and Summer Olympics, which are the two other big major sporting events on the calendar. But this World Cup, the number of eyes who will be tuning in and looking at this competition is unbelievable. It's no wonder the revenue is there.
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crichel, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.